What up, guys? Welcome to the long overdue episode 14 of the Fair City podcast. It's been a busy half year for the network, but I'll get to that in a bit. First off, I need to introduce my co-host, as I'm dying to introduce our guest. No offence.
Yeah.
Joining me in the room today is my good friend, who is a walking encyclopedia of gaming knowledge. The Gimli to my Aragorn, it is the awesome Kev. How you doing, Kev?
Never been described as an encyclopedia of knowledge of gaming, but yeah, I'm doing good, man. Good.
And joining us over Skype, we have the Grandmaster of Gaming, the ruler of the RPG, the King of the Convention, can only be Dave Wright from Tabletop Scotland. Hello, Dave.
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
That was certainly an intro. No, I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right, thanks.
Good. So for those of listeners who don't know, Tabletop Scotland is happening this month on the 24th and 25th of August at Jewish Centre in Perth. Dave, for those who don't know, tell people a little bit about what Tabletop Scotland is, or a lot, and also, how are you feeling with less than a month to go to the event?
It's 2 weeks on Saturday, guys, at the time of recording. so what is it? It's a 2-day board game, card game, and role-playing game convention. That's the kind of definition. But it's an event where we'll have 36 exhibitors, mixture of publishers, retailers, and the label I'm using for the rest of them is makers. So that could be terrain companies or it could be crafters. And within that, we have six sponsors. Got something wrong already. They are fabulous people for sponsoring us and fabulous people as well in the main because we know most of them. And I think we know all of them, actually. What am I thinking about? So we've got Board Game Book, which is essentially an annual. If you're familiar with your Beano and Dandy type annuals that we used to get as children, then this is essentially the same, but all about board games. Wow. And Owen Duffy leads that up. Oftentimes, reporter for The Guardian and Ars Technica on board games. We have D&B Games, who were there last year. They make dungeon tiles and stuff like that. They were sponsors last year as well. We have Geek & Sun with their fabulously luxurious gaming tables. We have Handiwork Games, which is a new startup, but the people behind it are long-standing people of the role-playing industry. John Hodgson, in particular, has been working in this hobby for many, many years, was former Cubicle 7 creative director, but they're working on role-playing games and card games. We've got Daniel Taylor Woodworking, who those who were there last year may remember Daniel with his wooden sword that he had. He very much ran out of stock very quickly as the weekend went on, so he's well prepared for this year. And we have Murphy's Vault. Yeah, well, yes, yeah, we'll find out, I'm sure. I'm sure if Daniel's listening, he'll be going, oh no, I need more.
Always more.
And we've got Murphy's Vault, who's one of the five VTRs we've got, but Connor from Murphy's Vault are sponsoring us this year, which is fantastic, and they're a store in Edinburgh that do all of the things that we do and a couple of extra things as well, like Magic the Gathering and stuff like that. So yeah, and alongside that, we've got tons of events, but I'd be here for like an hour and a half talking about all the events. But we've got, in summary, over 100 role-playing game tables over the weekend, which is a really nice milestone to hit. Mm-hmm. And lots of board game tournaments. We've also got a Starship Bridge Simulator, which is fully booked, apart from the ones that you can only book on the day, and various other things as he scrambles his brain to try and remember everything. But we've got loads of stuff. We've got demo space. We've got a gateway zone again, where we've got introductory games. We've got Haba back for the family zone. And we've got a playtest zone again, this time just on the Saturday, but we've got a playtest zone again. And we've also got a whole schedule of seminars. As I say, I could have talked for longer, but that's a nice summary of what we've got, and lots of space for people to just play games.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's what I liked last year when I was there, was the layout. There was a lot going on, but there was space as well.
Yeah,
and I quite liked that. That worked really well for me. I actually remember D&B Games particularly from last year because I was fascinated. Because for me, was my imagination being so crap.
Limited
was such limited, a better limited. Word. I wish yes. you jumped in quicker there.
I'd rather let you just run yourself over first and be like, yeah, could have gone yeah. with this one.
Yeah, don't save him from falling under the bus.
Absolutely
always.
Not. Yeah. I'll help him back up afterwards. Just to throw him back down.
Yes.
So with my limited imagination, I like the physical aspects of these games. I like the where you've got like the characters or whatever. And I remember DMB games, it just looked so good and had the little Aliens versus Predator scene set up.
Yes.
I just remembered that. I found a picture on my phone that I actually took of it, and it is just so cool.
And Andy has been going great guns. That's Andy Lawrence, who runs the company. He's they had a huge Kickstarter towards the, I think it was the end of last year, and they've been producing so many new terrain tiles. Their stand at Expo was just absolutely mobbed, and it was full of stuff. And they're also supporting our kids. We've got kids RPGs this year as well. We've got some 90-minute sessions which are targeted at 8 to 12 year olds, but the tables for them are opposite Andy's stand, so he's going to be supplying some dioramas for them, which is really cool. And I think that'll really help as well from particularly for the kids. Although I probably find kids' imaginations are better than adults' imaginations.
Less limited.
Yes, less limited. Yes, good definition point there, well done.
Yeah. So it's safe to say that you're like the draw for this year is just as big, maybe even quite a bit bigger than last year. So are you still happy with the choice of Perth as the location?
Yeah, absolutely. The venue and the staff in the venue and even just the people in Perth in general have been fantastic. When we came away from last year, and as a team we kind of decided, right, let's try and not think about too much about 2019 at that point.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, let's just reflect a bit and try and really compose what our thoughts. But the overriding kind of feeling from all of our attendees and indeed the centre staff and other people we interacted with was it just went really well.
And that
was kind of that was a question I was getting all day Saturday and all day Sunday, if I'm honest. But and I think probably about 3 o'clock on the Sunday, I probably broke and said, "Yeah." But the kind of crux for 2019 kind of falls into kind of two buckets for me. Is one, it's bigger because we've got the whole building this year.
Yeah.
So we've got the ice rink or the Strathmore Hall, as it's really known, but the ice rink.
It's ice rink.
there won't be any ice on it at the time. As well as the Strathairn Hall, which was where the majority of the convention was last year. So it's split over two halls, which gives you some logistical layout challenges. But we think we've resolved them, and we'll obviously take feedback on how that works. But the other bit was, just because we're doubling the size of the event, we didn't necessarily want to meddle with it too much.
Yeah.
It was, as a format, it worked. The feedback we got was very positive. The layout of the event made it feel spacious, and we've kept that because we know that we can, with this additional space, leave kind of, you know, 1 point whatever it is meters between the backs of chairs and all that stuff to make sure people don't feel crammed in. And all of that, which we did for last year, we're repeating for this year. So I've used the phrase, it's like our second album, because it's we're not experimenting too much. You know, we've got a formula that worked, so let's not change it too much. But that doesn't mean it's any easier to do.
No.
Yeah.
That's just preempted my question. Yeah. That's exactly what I was about to ask. Was it easier because you were keeping the format, but you had more space to play with, I guess?
Well,
you've just answered that. So.
Well, in a lot of respects, it is.
The Starship Bridge Simulator, what's that?
So, so Nigel from One Free Elephant, who are one of the publishers who are exhibiting, who exhibited last year as well, he loves a Starship Bridge Simulator. So essentially it is, you're on the deck of the Starship Enterprise, but obviously they fell the serial numbers off. and so you've got a captain, you've got the various roles within a bridge, and you play through scenarios. And so it is... well, it's called Empty Epsilon is the name of the software that runs it. There's a few of them out there, but Empty Epsilon. It's quite tricky. is the one that Nigel is a big fan of, and he said to me last year, if you've got the space, I'd love to do it. And I was like, right, okay. I've written that down, so that means you're doing it. but it's, and I think as soon as it, I think it was one of the first things to sell out as well when event booking went live. I just said to him, "Well, that means you need to do it, right? You don't need to do it." And he's like, "Ah, right, okay." Yeah. but no, it's so exactly. So it's teams of six people. So the captain and five other officers who play through one or two missions, depending upon how they do. And it's over about a 90-minute window. And we've got a number of the sessions where pre-book only, in the sense because we wanted to get a group of people that, well, not necessarily all knew each other, but, you know, could have a good dynamic. But we've kept three sessions, two on the Saturday and one on the Sunday, which are only bookable at the convention itself, so that, you know, people who missed out still have the chance to do it. And it just sounds fantastic. They do something similar at UK Games Expo, and they do it at other events as well. And it's Nigel's actually run this. He works at Edinburgh College, and he's run this within that environment. And they're actually lending the kit to run it as well. So that's fantastic support from them. So it's just been one of those things that you kind of go, can we do that? And I was like, well, I don't see why not. So let's try it. You know, as I say, a little bit of experimentation. Well, yeah, and it's been very popular, which is great. So fingers crossed it works. Hey, Nigel.
No pressure, though.
No pressure at all, Nigel. No, he's fine with it. He's fine with it.
So last year, I remember you telling us that last year you were in touch with the guys who did UK Game Expo quite a bit, and they were giving you advice. Have you found the roles reversed this year?
no, not at all. What was it? I was at a convention in Harrogate in March, Aircon, which is run by our friends Mark Cook and Ben Clark, who manage that. Mark's also the new CEO of Hush Hush Projects, who make Fog of Love, and they're one of our exhibitors. I'm sure that's completely unrelated. But when I was there, Duncan basically gave me a row because I couldn't switch off. At one point I was walking around and I was counting tables and things like that, going, how are they fitting all this in? And then I sat down and Duncan said to me, what is it? And I said, I've nothing left to do. He says, you could play some games. He said it with a bit more force than that, but, you know, I'm trying not to swear. but when I was there, I was chatting to Richard Antony, because Richard was there exhibiting, and his because he makes board games as well. Medusa Games are going to be at Tabletop Scotland, and I was blaring away to Richard, and Tony was there as a punter. So that was good. It's a good friendly relationship we've got with them. They're still open for all sorts of advice giving, and they actually reviewed the floor plan for us to see if we had any challenges that they could spot. And but obviously it's not their fault if it doesn't work. it's entirely ours if it doesn't work. But we're confident it will. The reason I'm kind of focusing on that is because rather than having all the exhibitors in one hall and all the play space in another, we just thought that's just not going to work. So yeah, we've essentially, if you ignored the fact there was a wall between the two halls, we've put the exhibitors in a square in the middle of it. So they are kind of split by the wall, as it were. But we've built the kind of flow of traffic in such a way of people that it'll work, or we're confident it'll work. So we'll see. But no, Tony and Richard have been great. They've consistently been helpful. Even at UK Games Expo when I was there in June, Tony was blaring away to me. And they, although for them, I think it's not necessarily an easy thing now, but it's because it's so big. They've got such a big team that I think they can, to a certain extent, relax at UK Games Expo. I'm looking at, for example, a box full of lanyards that UK Games Expo have supplied us for the event. And, you know, so between advice and actually giving us logistical support, it's fantastic.
it's absolutely what you need, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
People supporting each other in these kind of endeavours.
Yeah, and it's the sort of relationship we've built up with Mark and Ben as well at AirCon and indeed other conventions around the UK, which is ideal because we're not competing. You know, we're each collaborating on things. Yeah. And even this year, I can't remember if you did venture upstairs to where the Bring and Buy was last year, and it was absolute carnage. Yeah. Because it was so oversubscribed to what we thought it would be. Whereas AirCon this year, they introduced an online system for their Bring and Buy and for their games library. And we had a long chat with them before AirCon, in the sense that we would be interested in kind of borrowing it. When we were there, we saw how much slicker it was than a paper-based solution, and just it just felt easier. So Mark and Ben have been very helpful, and their developers made some changes to it to suit our needs because we're slightly different as to how we do things. And we launched that a couple of weeks ago because that essentially means the only way you can submit stuff to the Bring and Buy is online, so it removes a lot of the paper, but it also means you can be sitting somewhere else in the convention and load up the website during the convention and have a look to see if there's anything to bring and buy you want to buy. So it kind of gives you that browsability as well without needing to go there. And if you're selling stuff, it lets you know what's sold. So it's little things like that. You just go, that's really cool. Can we have that? And they were like, yeah.
Reducing the chaos a little bit then as well.
Well, that's the hope. I think there's an element of there's always going to be queues.
Oh, absolutely.
Bring and buy. Hopefully, what this does is it makes them go quicker, and it makes it a little bit less painful, particularly at the kind of checkout bit when people are coming to get their money and things like that. We no longer have to rifle through bits of paper. It's all electronic. Just bring up their name, work out how much they've sold, cash out, give them their money. Job done. You know, so it's. And as with last year, we're donating a percentage of that towards our charity, which this year is the Cornhill Centre in Perth, the Macmillan Centre, which is really good. And they've been really, really pleased with that as well, really supportive. I think actually some of them are coming, some of the people from Macmillan, so that's cool.
I remember it was 2015, I think it was, and I raised money for them through Tough Mudder.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a little handwritten thank you card through the post for it, which I thought was a really nice little touch as well.
It is. So, I mean, they take their fundraising very seriously because obviously what it is, mm-hmm. but they've been fantastic. I mean, they were offering to send us all sorts of stuff like tablecloths, and I'm like, no, it's fine, we've got plenty of tablecloths. It's just like, it's like, fine, we've got, can't remember how many meters of cloth we're going to have, but it's quite a few.
So are you finding, and this might sound cheeky and the wrong worded wrongly, but are you finding you're getting more sort of like freebies and offer of help and donations as a result of the success of last year?
I think it's probably more we're a bit more brazen about asking, yeah. as well. I mean, yes, we've had more companies approach us about exhibiting this year than we had last year. We've had more people in general kind of contact us about doing events at the convention and things like that we wouldn't have got last year. I think what we've done deliberately is when Duncan in particular, but and I, when we reached out to a lot of exhibitors after last year's event, like named publishers that people would recognize it going to somewhere like UK Games Expo or something like that, it was like, right, we know you're not going to come, but can you support us in another way? And some of them actually said, well, actually, we maybe would consider it, but not for 2019. Let's talk again after 2019 to come to the event. I was like, right, okay. So
2020 confirmed.
Well, no. You're not going to get me to say that. caveat is always applied to that. But the great thing about it is that I had a kind of spate of just sending speculative messages either over Facebook or email. And it was triggered by a discussion on our Facebook group for attendees to chat about what they wanted to do at the convention and to arrange games and stuff like that. And one of the guys has started a thread basically about what games you're looking forward to play. And there were quite a few games that aren't out yet in the UK that people were asking for. So I immediately kind of started writing them down and then started cross-referencing them to publishers and going, right, okay, I'm just going to contact all these people. And almost all of them, I mean, there's a couple who haven't yet replied, probably because they're still on their way back from Gen Con. But they almost all of them just said, yeah, we'll send you stuff. And one of them in particular, Ravensburger, who produce, amongst other things, jigsaws, but they also own a board game kind of wing that make, they own an imprint called Alia, which does some Euro heavier games, more strategy games like Castles of Burgundy. But they've also just released in the States the Jaws board game, where it's one of yous plays as the shark and the rest of yous plays as the, you know, the people in the film. And that was one of the ones that we were asked for. So I thought, I'll ask them for a copy of Jaws. They sent me a copy of Jaws and an R copy of Jaws and about an R, I don't know, a dozen games. Only on the preface that they wanted to support the event because they'd heard about it. And it's just like, right, okay. Yeah. And it is, and that's been replicated across a number of other publishers. Like Brain Games sent us copies of Ice Cool and Ice Cool 2. Thames and Cosmos have sent us stuff. I've literally had two emails today from people who are sending us stuff that I won't name until the stuff arrives. And stuff like that. And it's just really, really nice. It's quite heartwarming that we're thought of in this way. In fact, Asmodee today on their Facebook page, they did a post and they referred to us as an up-and-coming convention. And at first I was like, what does that mean? But the fact that they are calling us that is actually pretty cool. Because, you know, it's like, right, I'm going to take that. I'm not going to look at it and think, what do you mean by that type of thing? I'm going to take it as the praise it's probably intended to be. So yeah, we've certainly had a fantastic reaction to last year's event. But as I say, we're still quite happy to be shameless and ask for things. because if you don't ask, you don't get, fundamentally. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's been easy mostly. There's been some challenges along the way, but that's part and parcel of this.
You'd fully expect some challenges, though. It makes it fun.
I would get more sleep if there was less challenges. But at the same time, I probably wouldn't, because I'd just fill the time with something else. But yeah, it's part and parcel of doing something, because as much as it is largely a rinse repeat of last year, it's not. You know, there's a lot more to it. There's a lot of things that don't necessarily influence the attendee experience that we need to do. Even just something like, we needed to find a supplier that had 1,600 chairs. So I, okay, 1,600 chairs, that's a lot of chairs. And August happens to be a busy time of the year for catering companies that have lots of chairs. Right, can we find 1,600 chairs? Well, in the end we did. But that took three suppliers to work through them and have those conversations, and we've got 1,600 chairs. Fantastic.
They're not. That's all that really matters.
Yeah. and they're not in my house, because that would just break my house. but no, it's going well, and I think the engagement with the publisher community in particular has been really positive, and I suspect that once we get to the other end of this year's event, that'll become a conversation about what the future may bring.
And I see this year you've got an app.
Yeah. So my mate Chris is a mobile app developer. He's an app developer. He's in general, he works for DuckDuckGo, and he couldn't make it along last year, and I think he felt bad. So he said to me, "Do you want an app?" I was like, "To do what exactly?" He's like, "Well, I can pull down the events. People can kind of favorite them, it'll send them notifications about it. I can embed the maps into it so that people, if they're not entirely sure where they need to be, they can just pull that up." And it's just a little kind of helper as much as anything else. Mm-hmm. Because he works for a company like DuckDuckGo, which take internet privacy really seriously, he was really keen to avoid anything that kind of pulled down people's information and things like that, which, you know, I'm all for as well,
because
it simplifies it. So his approach was, we'll do it this way. And if you've got any other things that you'd like it to do, then we can talk about that. But this is really, because he's doing it in his spare time ultimately. And it's really easy. It's available both on iOS and Android, and it's really quite simple, but it works. I can imagine people using it when they're there, even just a little notification reminder 15 minutes before you need to go and get ready for an RPG or whatever it is. It's just, that'll be helpful, I think.
Definitely. And I find with a lot of these kind of things these days, having an app almost adds that extra level of like legitimacy to the whole operation as well.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. You're saying it's kind of like an afterthought almost, but like, a lot of people won't even consider some websites if they don't have an app to back it up. So it's, some people will look to that and think, oh, this is actually the real deal, you know.
And I think that's kind of one of these things where even last year we kind of went into it with, like, before we went public and that, it was like, we're going to be as professional as possible about this. You know, it was, we are just four guys who are pulling together this thing, but at the same time, we need to be professional about it. We need to do it in a professional manner. And I think that legitimacy or that credibility thing it emboldens that professionalism as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The fact that we have an app that it does very simple things, but, well, I'm sure it's technically not that simple, Chris, sorry. But it does very simple things from a user experience perspective. And it works very well. It's quite elegant and it enables us to do little things. Like, we can do push notifications to it, which we're not going to abuse, but it'll be things like, the bring in by is closing in half an hour, that sort of thing. You know, so people who haven't thought to go and have a look, we'll send that out, and the people who have downloaded the app, they'll get that push message. They can then choose to ignore it. It's entirely up to them. But it's just, and it won't be something that we'll send for every event, because that would annoy me if that was me receiving those. It's more about, right, we're closing in.
Notifications?
Well, yeah, but it's also things like, we are closing in half an hour, please get ready to leave. You know, things like that, which I'm sure on the Saturday night I'll be keen for people to do.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Yeah, exactly. You need to leave the building, folks. You can sleep in the street if you want, but you need to leave the building
now before we release the hounds.
Yes, exactly. And last year people were very good about that, and I fully expect people to be very good about that this year as well. It's more just because we will be back on site very early on the Sunday.
Yeah.
We want people out promptly on the Saturday. And, you know, the event is, the con has got things happening right up until, I think it's 10:30, 11 o'clock on the Saturday night anyway. So it's not like it's an early night. And there are people who are already planning to meet up at hotels and play games on the Friday and also on the Saturday night after the convention anyway. So that's part of that convention experience for a lot of people, including myself when I go away, in fairness. It's not just about being at the con, it's everything that's around that as well, which is great.
So coming back around to something we kind of briefly touched on before, you're saying you've seen a lot of, would you say you've seen a lot of returning guests from last year, and is there a particular number of newcomers that maybe didn't come last year but you'd been happy to secure for this year?
So yes and yes. So ticket sales currently are sitting at, I'm looking at my spreadsheet because I have many, I'm looking at the right spreadsheet, on pre-sales we're sitting 24% up on this time last year, and a lot of them are new people.
Fantastic.
And it's, I mean, it's something as a team we've actually debated if the MI is right, because Duncan's like, there can't be that many new people coming. And I'm like, well, you got to remember, when we built the form, it defaults to yes, you were at Tabletop Scotland 2018.
So you're having to manually change it
to no. And so there are a lot of no's. So that's people consciously choosing to say they weren't there last year. And whilst obviously I don't recognize everyone's name, a lot of the names don't kind of, I don't remember them at all. So it's kind of like, so we're confident that the MI is robust, even if it feels a bit weird. But it's weird in a good way. You know,
that is fantastic, because I remember you were kind of gushing last year as well, and you were talking about how fantastic sales had been up till that point as well. So to see it be up again is just, it's fantastic to see such a response for that.
It is. And we've kind of worked on the basis that if there is a 2020 caveat, you know, we don't expect to fill the venue this year, right? Because we've essentially doubled the space, we don't expect to have double the attendance. I mean, don't get me wrong, if that happened, we would both be delighted and terrified. but I think I probably said that last year about what we got last year. But I think at the same time, we expect, or expect the wrong word, anticipated a level of growth that would get us to the 1,200, 1,300 unique attendees, and we had 1,000 unique attendees last year. So we're looking at a 20 to 30%, and that number there is pretty much bang in the middle of that. So it's a really, really, really strong positive of the fact that there were probably people who sat on the fence last year, which I entirely understand. You know, who just wanted to give us our first year before they decided to come and visit us. They're all, as far as I can tell, quite a lot of them are coming this year, and I know some of them, so I don't grudge that in the slightest. but the return attendees has been really strong as well, and I think there's this what we get on the door thing. I mean, last year we got, you know, between 25 and 30%. Additional on the Saturday and about 20 to 25% additional on the Sunday. So, you know, if it kind of suggests we're going to hit near enough the, because we're over currently that 790 people that have pre-booked, and our total pre-books last year was 650.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
So, and we've still got a couple of days, and trust me, the spike in the last week has been incredible. You know, it's, in fact, we sold more tickets in the last week than we have in the previous five, I think. So it's, you know, it's that's, people like to leave things to the last minute.
People which, do love, you know, a good deadline.
They do, yes.
Well, that's it. There is still time now as well, because is it the end of this week? Is it?
Friday. The 9th of August at 8 p.m. we close the door on event pre-registration for events and pre-booking for tickets for the convention and for t-shirts. We'll obviously be selling tickets on the door, and we're ordering a percentage of t-shirts over and above the pre-order to sell on the day as well. And all of the events, except perhaps the D&D Epic, will have spaces at the convention as well, if people have missed that cutoff. So, you know, we're not saying you can't come if you haven't booked by then. We would just prefer that you booked before then, if you can.
So that cutoff date might be tomorrow, today, or yesterday, or last week, depending on when I get this episode edited.
Yeah, no pressure, mate. No pressure.
This is coming out just in time for 2020s, actually.
So. Oh, shush.
Just repackage it. It'll be fine. Nobody will even know.
just edit it. Yeah, just cut in whatever I've used that year. I won't say it again, because that'll just help you. But yeah, I think that's. I mean, I'm excited for this year. I'm excited to see what response we get from the new people this year, as well as the people who come back, because it was. The feedback we got was just phenomenal. So we're keen to not put that at risk in a lot of respects. That's where the pressure comes in a lot of ways, because we don't want to go backwards as an event. And we don't think we are, but until people experience it, you know, until we open the doors.
You're always going to have that little concern there, nagging.
That just keeps us... I don't know what it does. It keeps us awake at night, probably.
So, do you think, given that you kind of, you know what you're doing this year, and I'm not saying you didn't last year.
I didn't know what I was doing last year.
I'm rusty.
That was a shocking way.
I didn't know.
Be more relaxed this year. There we go.
Will I chill out before 3 o'clock on the Sunday? I probably will. Yes. Yeah. And there's probably a couple of reasons for that. One is, yes, it should be, as long as there's no fires for us to put out. Metaphorically, not there are no real fires, please, just metaphorical fires. But they, if as long as there's none of them for us to put out, I fully expect that by like 7 o'clock on the Saturday, I'll have relaxed, and that's kind of where two aspects of the con kind of come in, is that our seminar track this year is kind of chocker. It's full on the Saturday. It's full on the Sunday, and then we've got a repeat of something on the Sunday afternoon. So we've got a world building seminar where we've got game designers and developers talking about that process of how you design a world from scratch. We've got a crowdfunding seminar on basically that whole process of crowdfunding anything, whether it's a game or otherwise. We've got others as well, but the one I'm particularly excited about is that we've got a tabletop art seminar in the evening with Ralph Horsley, who's our guest. He's a Dungeons and Dragons and Magic the Gathering artist who lives in Leeds. And John Hodgson of Handiwork Games, who's, say, one of our sponsors. And John's done lots of work for Lord of the Ring or the One Ring RPG and other stuff. He's doing some really good work for Onyx Path's Scarred Lands product line just now, and Andy Hepworth, who is the creative director for Calliope Games. John and Andy happen to be friends of mine, so that makes this easy in some respects. But there's a panel about art, and then we're taking a kind of short break, and after that we're showing a film, which I saw at Gen Con last year in the States, and it was a film about the art history of D&D, which... it's just one of these things you kind of go, why would you make a film about that? But the art history of role-playing games, fantasy role-playing games in particular, is actually really quite interesting, because it talks about when fantasy novels started to have cover art and how a lot of the artists who worked on fantasy novels back then were also the artists who were working in the role-playing industry. And that kind of growth of that industry of tabletop art is kind of spelled out in this film. And I believe, because I've not seen anything to the contrary, that we're a UK premiere of the film. And the people behind it have been fantastically supportive. I spoke to them at Gen Con, I emailed them after Gen Con, I then emailed them repeatedly after that just to remind them I was here. And they've given us permission to show the film, which is fab. It coincides with the Dungeons & Dragons epic on the Saturday night, so quite a few of our D&D fans have been going, I'm not going to be able to do both.
It's Sophie's choice.
Well, and you know, us giving people choices is obviously a hardship. But we've decided to show the film again on a Sunday afternoon. And I think it gives people the opportunity, even if they're not that interested in the subject matter, just to go and relax and do nothing and be entertained almost. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to be playing a mentally challenging board game or whatever. You know, you can just go and relax with a drink and watch a film about, you know, fantasy art. And Ralph Horsley is in the film as well, which is one of the reasons why we invited him up, because I wanted to have that connection. And he's a really nice man, which helps. So it's and that for me is just a different dynamic. So that's probably where we're experimenting, as well as a Starship Risk Simulator. It's to give a bit more content to the event. And the other thing, which I've been getting slagged off for at work a lot of late, is that we're attempting a world record on the Sunday.
With the lanyards?
Yes, with the lanyards. This photograph of me from last year that was shared by Bez, some stuff by Bez, wearing 5 lanyards, which then turned into this thing of, I wonder if there's a world record, and me going, there can't be.
There's a world record for everything.
Exactly. And the world record is 300 lanyards. And they don't even need to be different lanyards. they can be the same type and all that. And it was like, right, okay, so if we can monetize this for charity, guys, I'm quite happy to do it. So it's kind of grown from there, and it's officially lodged as an attempt. And we're going on the Sunday, just on the Sunday, so that in case I do have any metaphorical fires to put out on the Saturday, people can put a lanyard over my neck for a donation to charity.
Excellent.
And then about 4 o'clock, we'll do the count. which is just mental. But in a good way, because it's for charity. That's the only reason I would have done it.
It's good mental.
Exactly. Oh dear. But yeah, it's, I mean, things like that, which was not our idea at all. The blame for that lands fairly and squarely with Eric and Jennifer from Juniper Green Games in Edinburgh, which is a board game club, and for their sins of suggesting this and it now happening, I have forced, probably too strong a word, emotionally blackmailed them into running a seminar on.
How is that any less strong than?
Well, you know. Okay. I've encouraged them in a not necessarily always going to take no for an answer kind of way. Is that better? Is that how you want me to say that? Sure. So they're doing a seminar about games with tabletop with children, as it's called, because their games club has a lot of young families, which is cool. And it's part of the con's identity, you know, that we've got the family zone and stuff like that. It makes sense. So they were told that was a condition, if I put it that way. Which, of course, they said yes.
It's not a condition if it's not conditional.
Well, they said yes, so it doesn't matter. I'm doing it.
It does tie into something that we'd talked about last year as well. It's just the overall, like, massive surge in interest of all age groups and D&D, tabletop gaming in general. And it's great to see that, again, after a year, it's still growing as well. You're seeing more and more people getting more interested in it. You see so much more publicity around it. And it's such a fantastic time, because I remember growing up, like, this was the kind of thing that you were almost stereotypically hiding in basements and school libraries to carry out such activities. And here we are, we've actually got a convention in Perth. It's
sort of standing out in the open going, here we are, bring it.
And they do bring it.
I think it is that, I've always been open about my hobby, but I think in recent years it's been much more easy, is probably the wrong word, but simple for me to be open about it. You know, I mean, I wear gamer t-shirts at work all the time, and you know, even when we have kind of events at work, I'll wear my Tabletop Scotland t-shirt with my name on the back, because people need to know who I am at these events that we're doing. So it's kind of like, well, there you go, my name's on the back. I don't need you to wear anything else that's got my name in it. But it's, I think,
except the lanyard with your name on it.
Well, yeah, I'll have one of them at the convention as well, because not everyone's going to look at my back. Well, just the one, until Sunday, and then I'll have more than one. Why did I do this? Because it's for charity, Dave.
That's why.
But no, I think the growth of the hobby in general has been just phenomenal. I mean, UK Games Expo yet again reported a sizable growth in their attendance, and they're already taking up, I think it's essentially three halls of the NEC, as well as the Hilton Hotel in Birmingham. So it's kind of like, right, okay, that's showing year-on-year growth. Aircon and Harrogate, when I mentioned earlier on, they're growing every year. And as a, you could say, well, maybe that's just isolated to these events. Well, it's not. You know, there's more and more products being released every day. You know, 3.5, I think last year it was like 3,000 to 3,500 board games were released every year. This year it's closer to 3,500 to 4,000 board games. So it's quite a intimidating volume of stuff, but the kind of community, the audience for it is growing to match it, which is great to see. And I mean, a lot of the people who are coming and who came last year either knew nothing about the hobby at all, on the basis that it just sounded like a nice family thing to go and do, or it was they used to do it, and you know, they used to play D&D back in the 90s or the 80s or whatever it was, and they decided to rediscover it. And majority of those people, as far as we can tell, are coming back, and more of that demographic is coming back from all ages, you know, from all over. Well, I was going to say from all over the UK, but we've got people coming from North America this year, which is just nuts.
Wasn't it? I think it was Germany last year.
And we've got people coming from France, Denmark, and Germany this year. But we've also got, I think it's four from America and two from Canada, But
it's the same thing.
Well, I'm sure the Canadians would disagree. but it's though. Well, yes, very politely. But it's one of these things that you just kind of go, what?
That's mind-boggling to think.
It is.
I know. It's like one thing to think, oh, someone in Australia downloaded the podcast.
Yes.
But it's another thing that this person is actually getting a, what, 10, 12, 14-hour flight across to the UK for your event. I mean, that's something else.
I mean, we probably benefit from a timing perspective of being during the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Oh, right? Absolutely. But
that was in part deliberate. But the fact that they're staying and coming to our event while they're here, you know, they didn't have to do that, but they are, which is great.
That is fantastic. But that does tie back into your reason for choosing Perth, or one of your reasons for choosing Perth as the location to host this anyway, was that it was so centrally accessible.
Yes. And it gives you the option that if you are a tourist, in inverted commas, that you can choose to continue north.
Yeah.
You know, and explore the islands or whatever. You know, it's and you don't need to be a local. By that I mean anyone in the United Kingdom. in that context,
there's no excuse to not make it to the event now, because you know we've got people coming from across the Atlantic Ocean. So
exactly. I mean, I may have laboured that a couple of times, but it's you know, it becomes one of these things that you kind of go, wait a minute, there's people coming from the States and Canada for this. That's nuts, but B, that's them making a conscious effort. So if people are hesitating about coming because it's too far, well, you just have to think it's really not.
that is bizarre. Like,
yes,
good bizarre, but bizarre.
But it's bizarre, isn't it? I mean, it is good bizarre. I'm not complaining in the slightest, and I'll be delighted to meet
I still
them.
Just can't get my mind around people choosing to come to Perth.
To be honest, we're not going to cure you of that, right?
I know. It's ingrained in there. It's just, really, though?
What's up, Fair City Podcast? This is Chris and Dan from Fresh Talk. Check us out at freshtalkpodcast.com.
That's right. And if you had any idea how long it took me and Dan to do that bumper, you would actually probably never listen to us.
It's totally true. Get him, Stoby.
Hey, Stoby, it's me, Jarrett. Go to JarrettGoesToTheMovies.com. Check out the podcast. Also, go to Rockstar Dad Show. Check that one out, too. It's freaking great. They're both great. Also, you just got a text and a Facebook message. And I probably better give you this phone back.
Hello, this is Jim.
And my name is Graham Chin-Jack.
And we're both responsible for the monstrosity that is A Bloody Mess Podcast.
We can be found at www.facebook.com/messpodcast, twitter.com/mess_podcast, Instagram is A Bloody Mess.
And we're our alternative Wednesdays to the Science of Fiction Podcast, which is a must listen.
Well, it's fantastic, though. It's great for the city, it's great for you guys, it's great for everyone, and I mean, I unfortunately had to miss the event last year because I was on the other side of the Atlantic.
Indeed.
In an RV, not cooking meth in the desert.
No, you weren't cooking meth. I remember the stories, though, but apparently you weren't really doing that.
I wasn't really doing that. I have to say that by law. They'll come for me if I say anything else. So everyone I'd spoken to, because there was a group of guys, obviously, from the podcast network itself, but that had went, but I have several other friends who attended across the weekend as well, and everyone I spoke to just had nothing but positive things to say. So as a newbie attending this year, have you got any top tips for a newbie attending this event?
So are you a newbie to the hobby, or are you just a newbie to the convention?
A little bit of both. I played a little bit of D&D when I was younger, and I do play some tabletop games from time to time, but it's a very occasional hobby.
Yeah. So the main kind of way that we suggest people who are being introduced to both the convention experience and also, you know, to the hobby in general, not just to the convention, is, you know, we've got a gateway zone which is being run by us, so not by a publisher or anything like that, where we've selected 8 games, which are very accessible from the point of view of they're not that complicated to learn, but they provide lots of different experiences. So I mean, we've got a few classics, modern classics, I believe the term is, like Ticket to Ride and Carcassonne in there.
I do like a bit of Ticket to Ride.
But we've included games like Flamme Rouge, which is a game essentially about the Tour de France, but not just the Tour de France, essentially all sorts of cycling racing. And it's fantastic. I own a copy. It's in the shelf behind me. But it's one of these games that you just think, a board game about cycling, and you're like, yeah, but it's so intuitive once you start playing it. It's so much fun, and it's quick as well. We've also got Sushi Go, Splendor, Takenoko, Santorini, which I only played for the first time a few weeks ago and was thoroughly blown away by it. It was our most popular game out of our library last year, by a country mile, and I was really, really impressed by it. And we've got our game called Catch the Moon, which is a bit of a strange one because you look at it and you go, what on earth? And you're balancing ladders on top of other ladders and you're trying to catch the moon. And it's quite weird. I've never played it, but it's one of these ones you kind of go, ah. Oh. But I think it's, again, it's visually appealing. All of these games that we've chosen are visually appealing. So it makes it easier for you to sit down and play it. And our Gateway Zone, that's where we would recommend people who are completely new or relatively new to the hobby to do it. But alongside that, we have Asmodee with their demo team. And we've expanded their space this year, and Coiled Spring, who is an ARC and a publisher distributor, we've expanded their space this year as well. So they're going to bring a lot of games that are Gateway-esque type games. It was quite an interesting chat with Asmodee a couple of weeks ago where I had to say to them, you can't have Carcassonne on your list because we have Carcassonne on our list because it's actually one of their games. And so you just need to choose something else. And it was like, well, what
this
do we choose?
This is our toy. You can't play with it.
Well, there is no point in us demonstrating it and them demonstrating it fundamentally. Yeah. So I've given them the challenge to go and find something else from their tens of thousands back catalogue. But we've got a list of the games now from those publishers that they're going to be demoing. We're reviewing to see if we want to ask them to change anything. Other than the Carcassonne one, no, probably not. So we'll be publishing that and probably wait until after ticket sales finish, just to kind of tease the games that are going to be there. Because some of them will be new releases, some of them will be modern classics, to use that term. So I think if you were to spend a chunk of your time on a Saturday, almost as an orientation, I would go through the Gateway and the Asmodee and Coil Spring demo spaces. With, if you've got kids with you, then Haba Zone, you won't have a choice. They'll take you to it anyway. and there'll be, you know, lots and lots of Haba games that are currently sitting in my room that I'm sitting in just now.
Any children, but I will have David. So, I mean,
it's close enough, right? And to be honest, playing games like Rhino Hero and things like that is perfectly acceptable for adults, or so I keep telling myself. But no,
works for me.
Yeah, and Rhino Hero is great, and we'll have stuff for that. And we've got some. Haba actually have been fantastic. They had a change in our contact because the person who we were dealing with last year was maternity cover, so it was kind of like, right, so the new person came in, or the old previous person, as it were, came in, and it was like, right, okay, how do we approach this? It's a completely new relationship we need to start. So Duncan was like, leave this to me. Duncan, who speaks fluent German and can write fluent German, writes an email in German to Mika Hava and copies me in, and I am reading this going, what on earth are you saying? Because I can't read German. But funnily enough, Mika can because she's German. But it was one of those things where I think that helped break the ice, if nothing else. But they've been great. We've got some extra goodies to kind of give away, freebie stuff to give away this year, which we'll be doing primarily to the kids. But I'm sure if the adults ask nicely, they might get one.
What if you're a combination of both?
I'm not going to judge you if you choose to wear a Rhino Hero mask, right? I'm really not. Where it'll fit your head is probably a different question.
Well, yeah.
But that's where Steve spent most of his time last year, was because He had his kids with him. Let's just clarify that one.
Yeah, yeah, he did. That's right, he did. And it was great.
Those kids, I heard all about it.
And it was mobbed the entire weekend. The family zone was mobbed, and it was great to see. It was actually one of the things when we had two of the councillors from Perth Council come in, and I think it was one of them in particular who was like, right, that's amazing. How can I help? Yeah, and you know, we've had some good dialogue with the council, and we've actually got I'm not going to name any names, but we've actually got one of the local MPs coming this year as well on a Sunday with his wife, which is just like, okay, that's cool. I mean, we did invite them, but they didn't have to say yes, fundamentally. So it's great that they are, and we'll see how that helps us, you know, should we have future plans. Caveat. can't resist the caveat. As you know, I can just keep talking and talking. I think the new person experience is certainly geared around those things, but all of our exhibitors as well will have something to offer in that regard. Whether it's people, whether it's game publishers or accessory makers or retailers, and they'll all have something that will cater to the new person who either doesn't want to go and have a demo because they're on their own or whatever. And it's something for those who are coming on their own. We are encouraging people to go to our Facebook group and join in the conversation there, because there are people who are coming on their own who are meeting up with people now because of that.
Yeah.
And we have a players wanted kind of symbol system as well, where if people are playing a game, whether it's borrowed from our library or not, you just grab one of these, I think it's like a 3-foot pole with a thing on top of it that says players wanted. And we absolutely encourage people to take advantage of that, because that's people inviting you to the table. You know, so it's that. We really kind of want people to connect, as it were, over the games.
I quite like, it's just a sort of personal recommendation, but last year when we were looking around the exhibitors, stuff by Bez.
Yes.
Bez was there and had the...
Was it Yogi? One where you have to contort yourself in positions?
No, it was Steve's wife was enticed over. and she doesn't like playing games.
Yes.
But Bez had her playing this sort of word game, and she was loving it.
Yes.
Absolutely
yes.
loving it. Yeah. Yes.
Didn't even realize she was playing a game.
Yeah, and Bez, again, is having events. So part of Bez's convention kind of shtick is that at 2 o'clock, there's an event at the stand for one of her games. So it's kind of like, right, okay, I think on the Saturday, it's as he flicks through the program because his brain is melting. on the Saturday, it's Wibble Plus Plus, so it is that... letter word game, and on the Sunday it's a new one called Kitty Cataclysm, which is another one that's hard to say, which is basically a game about cats that have roles like spy and things like that. And all of the artwork for that has essentially been crowdsourced through all the conventions that Bez has been at, including our one last year. If you were at Bez's stand last year, you probably had to draw a cat at some point, and they've gone into the game as the artwork for the game, which is a really, really creative way of crowdsourcing artwork. Yeah. Mm. Duncan's hopeful that his cat made it in. or maybe not, because it maybe wasn't that good a drawing. I didn't draw one because I know I'm rubbish at drawing. So it was very much... Bez is doing that this year, and Coil Spring are doing a King Domino and a King of Tokyo tournament like they did last year. And again, they're very accessible, easy to get into games. And very easy to learn as well.
So is there any particular exhibitors or stalls that you, like if you were stepping away from this and looking at it only from a visitor's perspective, would there be any in particular you'd be looking forward to visiting yourself?
I can't answer that, honestly. I can't. I mean, because some of these people are friends as well as people see.
Want to start a war.
No, I don't want to choose. It's not like choosing between children, because I only have one child. But you know, it's one of these things where all of them have an offering which we believe will appeal to our attendees. And it may be that not all of them have an offering for you, but we guarantee the vast majority
there
of them
will be something for you, though.
Yes, yeah. It is having that diverse mix.
Yeah.
And it's something that we struggled with last year to work out what that mix should be. But it worked, the mix that we had, and we've essentially replicated that mixture of retailer, publisher, maker, etc., to try and keep a balance. And we'll have a look at it this year, after this year, and see, right, okay, did it work for you guys from an exhibitor point of view? Because we want all of them to have a good event.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so if it works for them with that mix, then again, it kind of proves the kind of model, as it were, that this will work if we were to scale it up, you know, if we were to do it again. But it's one of these things. But I mean there are that many of them, and as I say, a lot of them are friends, so I can't recommend any of them over any other than you should visit all of them.
That'll do as an answer.
Yeah, I mean we've got quite a lot of Scottish companies there. We've got people coming up from England and that as well. And as I say, there's the Geek and Sun, whilst they have an office in Nottingham, a lot of the team are actually from Poland. And by Hush Hush Projects, who do Fog of Love, they're a Danish company. It's just their CEO happens to be in the UK. So temporarily until he moves to Denmark next year, I think. But that's you know, we've attracted people from reasonably far and wide, and we think the mix we've got gives a good choice, maybe in some cases too much choice, but then
there's no such that's thing.
Exactly, it kind of gives people, you have a decision to make then, so make a decision, you know. As long as you don't get paralyzed by that decision making process, you'll be fine.
Go both days and do everything. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I find certainly some of the feedback we got last year was people who did go both days and didn't do everything because they didn't perceive themselves to have the time to do everything. It's like, okay, that's fine. Did you have a good time anyway? Yes. Well, then that's fine.
Mission accomplished.
You don't need to experience everything we have to offer. We would like you to.
If you go in the door and find something that just works for you right away, then that's fine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a success, in my opinion. Yeah. You know, it's, I mean, when I go to cons now, as per the Duncan shouting at me story for not playing games. And he did the same when we went to UK Games Expo in June, in all fairness, although I did play three games there. You know, three games in 3 days, that's not too bad for me, even at a convention. But it was very much, you know, I go to conventions now for different reasons, but the people who I know who were at UK Games Expo this year for the first time, they were there for all 3 days, and they struggled to get through even half of one hall in those 3 days. And I'm like, well, stop trying to see everything. You know, you can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So don't try. You know, have a think about what you want to see, prioritize, or whatever process works for you. Or just wonder and then go, oh, that looks interesting.
Yeah.
Tends to be my approach at conventions.
Any, like, kind of comic cons of that I go to, that tends to be my kind of mode of attack. Like, I'll go and I'll kind of survey everything and then... I remember seeing something at this point, I'll go start there and work my way back, kind of thing. So, yeah, like, different people have different ways of attacking
Absolutely.
Kind of things.
Absolutely.
And that's where the app would come in handy for me, because it's got this schedule, and you can see it's got the schedule on there. So I can think ahead and think, well, what do I want to see? And as a complete newbie to all this stuff, I mean, I was at the ticket launch party and absolutely loved Pandemic.
Well done. Even though Kirsten was probably bullying you throughout it to play it properly.
Well, we ended up playing with someone who's in the UK Championship final.
Yeah, that was Kirsten, yeah. They came, I think it was second or third at the UK Championships.
They would have won if we were there.
Yeah, they needed us. But
yeah. So we
were the glue that gelled that whole
Yeah, so they're competing at our event, our Pandemic event as well this year. And I kept saying to her, you know, you need to remember that, you know, you're not a shoo-in to be in the final here. She's like, but we won last year. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sure. But that doesn't mean you're a shoo-in to the final. Because we're doing it in... Because last year, that event, I mean, it's one of these things you kind of think, cooperative game, why would you have a competitive element? And I think I remember talking about this last time. It's like, it's one of these things where you go, ah, we'll put it on and we'll see how many teams we get. I mean, we had... It's capped as an event. You can only have a maximum of 12 teams. So, and we had 12 teams last year, which was like, oh. So this year we've gone with two semi-finals on the Saturday and a final on the Sunday.
Yeah.
So it's still going to be capped, but it might be that slightly more teams from the first semi-final go through to the final than the second semi-final. And it really depends on how they perform, as it were, in the scoring. But it's an interesting experiment as much as anything else, the pandemic one, because it's a co-op game. But you're essentially racing against other people to do it as efficiently as possible. It was quite tense watching it at UK Games Expo because me and Duncan sat and watched it, which probably didn't help Kirsten and Kevin, in all fairness.
You're being watched, no pressure.
Exactly. And we even got them special T-shirts made up with Tabletop Scotland champions and stuff like that. So again, no pressure at all. You're representing the convention here, guys. No, they did us proud. I can't say anything bad about them because they've been great. And also, Kirsten plays in my D&D game, so she'll inflict pain on me if when she sees me.
So that actually leads nicely into one of the questions that our resident DM from the network has asked, which is there room for competitive tabletop games like PvP, D&D, arena battles in the hobby and at cons?
So yes, there is. Yeah. And we actually have, I think it's on the Sunday, as he looks at the schedule, we have a Battle Royale event on the Sunday afternoon where the DM, and I was sceptical about this as a thing for us to have, not as an entity, because I kind of felt maybe it's too soon for us to do this. But Greg, who's looking after our D&D area, was kind of bounced off him when we got the submission. And he was like, no. There are people who want to do that right now. There are people who want to do that. I was like, okay, cool. So we've added that to the Sunday afternoon slot where the DM has made 17th level characters. So pretty much, I mean, 20th level is the kind of top line in D&D 5th edition. So he's made 17th level characters, but also enabling people to bring their own with certain criteria assigned to it for them to do it. And it is literally a PvP session, which just, I mean, I'll be honest, isn't what I would play D&D for. But then I DM, I don't play. You know, I run the game, so it's, that's probably why it wouldn't work for me. But at the same time, there's an event called the D&D Open, which for the first time was held outside of North America this year at UK Games Expo. And it's not PvP, but it is competitive in the sense that your performance is scored as you go through it. And you get to certain stages in it where the kind of, as you move through the open, you progress based on how you have performed as an individual player. And it's quite an alien thing in a lot of respects because, you know, role-playing is collaborative storytelling, right?
Yeah.
So it kind of feels a bit weird, but that had, it was about 100 players in it at UK Games Expo over 2 8-hour stints. You know, it's just, and I have friends who were running it, and they were just saying this is insane, but great fun. You know, but that's kind of the appeal. It's different as well. You know, and D&D started out as, certainly in the convention environment, as a competitive event back in the 70s and 80s. Certainly in the 70s it was. So it's one of these things where you kind of go, well, why would you not try that? And, you know, we may experiment with that if we do any more events, obviously. Caveat again. but it's the sort
of... With that made. I know.
But it is one of these things where you kind of go, yeah, we could. But then and we had this challenge this year, in all fairness, with the role-playing of how much can we fit into the schedule? Because we had people we had to turn down. And I felt bad about that for running role-playing games, primarily on the basis of we can't really fit any more tables in without it having a negative impact on the player's experience. Yeah. I mean, we've added a couple of games in where we felt it would work for a couple of tables, and we felt it would work. And again, we'll see how that goes. But it maybe was partly driven by, let's try and get 100 sessions of role-playing games over the weekend. But with spacing of the tables, particularly in something like role-playing where it's narrative,
yeah,
and you need to make sure that it's easy-ish to hear each other. And we'll see how that goes. But as I say, we actually had to turn some people down, which was refreshing in a way, particularly for the non-D&D stuff, because we had, I think we had 6 on average per session last year in the non-D&D, but this year we've got, in a couple of cases, 11. So it's just, we've got everything from like the New Aliens RPG, which isn't even out yet. It's currently going through. It's gone through playtest and it's now in pre-release, but you can get the PDF early. We've got people's home games that they've developed and have actually turned into published games. And we've got all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff, which is great to see because it really shows the diversity of the hobby.
Yeah.
Whilst at the same time, we've got tons of D&D, which being a D&D fanboy makes me really pleased. And the fact that 3 of the adventures that are being run in every slot, apart from the Saturday night, have been written for the convention. So Wizards of the Coast have a thing called Custom... I'm going to get this. CCC is the acronym. I can't remember what it stands. It used to be called Convention Created Content. I think it's just called Custom Created Content now.
Yeah.
Where authors write a game, Wizards approve it, they review it, they check it to make sure it's legal in the definition of Adventurers League. And these have been created for our convention, one of whom by an actual Wizards of the Coast kind of author who's worked on their titles, Ian Hawthorne. But the other 2 have been written by guys who ran games last year. which is awesome. And they get to keep that. Our logo goes on it because it was released at our convention. And but those games, those scenarios are exclusive to our event for, I think it's between 3 and 6 months. And then other cons will run them, which is great, again, because it's kind of like, right, okay, that helps.
It's further exposure, really.
Exactly. It's free advertising in that sense. Mm-hmm. Which is just really cool. And I'm really excited to see how that pans out. Well, I'm just really excited, full stop, right?
Yeah, it is exciting times, though. Like, everything just is falling together really quite nicely, and seeing how much it's grown in just 1 year is fantastic.
Yeah.
And it kind of leads us into the next question.
Ooh.
What are the future plans?
We have... Tentatively. So would we want to do it again? I think it comes back to, and I get asked this a lot, as you can probably imagine, and not even just in relation to people within the hobby. It's, what would you do? Do you want to do it again type thing? I've always kind of come into this with the resolve, as it were, that I need to want to do it.
Yeah,
and the team fundamentally needs to want to do it, but from speaking on my own behalf, I need to want to do it. It's not a question of it makes money, although that would be nice.
Yeah.
It's more a question of the amount of hours I spend on this. I want to feel like it was a success.
Yeah.
So working on the assumption that it's a success and that I don't have some sort of breakdown physically, mentally, or otherwise through all these lanyards getting put away on Sunday. I wouldn't rule it out if I put it that way. I have to want to, and we'll take our time to think about that. We've already spoken to the venue about it. I mean, we're not daft about that.
Oh, yeah.
They're very keen for us to stay there for as long as we want to be there. And it's that sort of thing. I think the challenge will always be, and it's not a real thought process, and it's something I've spoken to the convention center, the Jura Center about, is that there may come a time, should this continue to grow, that we outgrow the venue.
Yeah.
And we have to really be quite cautious about that. In the sense of, if we are going to outgrow it, we want to do that in the right way.
Yeah.
In the sense of, if we chose to move it, it would be a choice. Then we would want to make sure that we did that in a way that we didn't, do it in a, on bad terms, from a better
phrase. Absolutely, yeah.
But at the same time, we don't have to move it. We just have to make sure we keep it fresh. And it might be that it becomes a pre-order-only event. You know, if the demand's there, then that might be what happens. But we're talking, I think, a good two and a bit years away from that type of scenario, should we continue to do it.
There you go, caveat at the end. There you go.
I enjoy it. I get a kick out of it. It's great seeing all these people there. No, I don't play any games when I'm there. But as I've said probably countless times, I'm not doing it for me to play games. I have a games club that I co-organize, and I run games of D&D roughly every fortnight. So it's kind of like, I'm not creating a convention for that reason. I'm creating it because it needed to be created. And I knew that with the team I've got that we could do that. And it's been great. It's worked really well. That's kind of where we are.
So the groundwork is laid. It's just seeing how everything falls.
Yeah. And I think the interesting challenge from a 2019 point of view is obviously we are taking over all of the space, right? So it's one of these things where you kind of go, right, we know now what our floor plan is for any future years, should we decide to do them, right? It's because we can't go anywhere else. We can. There's not another hall we can expand into.
Yeah, this
but is. But in some respects, that's a good thing because our floor plan, unless we need to change it, is largely done. Yeah. And trust me, the floor plan's a lot of work. the jigsaw puzzle over exhibitors is quite challenging at the best of times. But it's the sort of thing like that that you kind of go, right, okay. This, again, building that foundation for that potential of us doing it again, it's there. Yeah. Anyway, enough on that topic. Move on.
If you insist.
So just thinking about that and thinking about, you know, like if it did move on, is there a dream venue? Or again, does it just come back to the enjoyment factor?
I mean, there isn't a dream venue. I mean, just to kind of answer that part of the question, I think the challenge is that finding another venue that ticks enough boxes is actually the hard bit. I mean, as I said to you guys, I think last year, I'd been looking for a venue for years, and it was purely through stumbling upon the Jura Centre after my wife, who owns a wool shop, and being at Yarn Festival, coming back and going, you need to look at that. And I was just like, right, okay. But other venues that have more space than the Jura Centre and also then have space to grow into, there's only really three locations in Scotland that have them, and they're Aberdeen, Glasgow, and Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, well, would I want to move it to any one of those locations? Well, unfortunately for those listening who are in those the first two locations, probably not, because I work in Edinburgh, I live in Fife. I'm not travelling up and down to Aberdeen or over to Glasgow every other week to have meetings. That logistically, personally, that's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But Edinburgh would have different challenges from a cost point of view, from a time of year point of view as well. We would probably need to move it in the calendar.
Yeah, if you were talking earlier on how this kind of coincides with the fringe. So
it's
to change everything, really.
Yeah, from a hypothetical scenario of us moving it somewhere else, we would essentially be creating a new convention, which, you know, I have no desire to do whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would never rule it out, because that would be daft. But at the same time, it would be... It kind of goes back to the reference I made about being fair to the Jura Centre and not leaving on any kind of bad terms, is that the groundwork for a move would need to run in parallel to planning the final, in quotes, year at that venue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd essentially be running two conventions at the same time, almost, which is a huge undertaking, trust me.
Well, given the work that goes into one, running two would be...
And it is a conversation I've had with the guys at UK Games Expo, just to go back to that, because they've moved venue now three times as they've grown. And it's like, well, how did you do that? You know, just so that I have that in the back of my head. How did you do that? And that's kind of the process they went through. It's the same for Mark and Ben for Aircon. They've moved, I think, once maybe twice. Well, twice if you include the first one because it was in Mark's house, but I don't really count that.
I don't think that counts.
Well, you didn't have 25 people at it. It's not really a convention. 25 people. But yeah, but those are the sorts of things that we would need to consider should that be a scenario we want to look at. It's just a... I don't have the mental capacity for that right now or probably ever at this point in time, as far as I can see, mental or physical for that matter.
Just on the sort of topic of dream, like aspirations or whatever, Stu's also asked, with the rise of in popularity of tabletop RPGs through streaming and internet fame,
yes,
with, I suppose, the most common example in my head would be Critical Role, is there any notable Never guests from that part of the gaming community that you would want to have attend the con?
So it is something that we've talked about, but again, that's for the hypothetical doing it again, because there are within the UK quite a lot of streamers. And there's like Mark Hume and the guys from, I've forgotten the name of it, Mark, apologies, High Rollers, that's it, who do a really popular D&D streaming cast, and they're based down in London. And there's also a couple in Scotland as well who are much more smaller profile, but, you know, local. And there's a group that come to the Edinburgh Fringe every year called Adventurers Wanted, who include members of the audience in that, and they also do a stream during the Knot Festival period. So there are people that we could approach. How we would do that, I have honestly no idea. You know, we do have a radio drama group this year called Tales of from the Alethean Society, who do a Cthulhu-esque comedy horror, which is on the Sunday. They're doing a live show on the Sunday for us, which is really cool. And it's an experiment to see, is there an appetite for that sort of thing? And if there is, then again, it's the sort of thing we could start to consider, would we have streamers? I mean, we've had people not approach us about it, we've had people ask us, you know, is that something we would consider? And it goes into the back of my head, or it goes into a file in my Google Drive or whatever it is. You know, it's something, because my brain's
to
not...
To revisit,
you know,
at a later date.
Yeah, I mean, ideas are ideas, right?
Yeah.
And that whilst there are... And the old analogy of there's no such thing as a bad idea, there's just bad implementation of an idea. It's that that's kind of where I am with it. I wouldn't rule it out. I'd have to work out what we would do with them and how we would frame it within the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Because the D&D epic on the Saturday night is probably going to be a mainstay, you know, should we continue to do this year on year. You know, it's part of our identity now, so why would we disrupt that? Would you put that up against a streamer? Probably not. So how would you do that?
Either party there.
Exactly. So it's trying to find those balances. And it was certainly when I got the permission to show the film on the Saturday night, I knew immediately that there was going to be a clash with the D&D gamers who would be in the epic. Because whilst it's a film about our history of D&D, it isn't just for people who play D&D, but, you know, it is about D&D.
Yeah.
So there was always going to be that clash. But that's fine. I'm happy to give people choices. You know, the streaming angle is a whole other kettle of fish that I know very little about. I don't watch streams, so it's not my bag, but that doesn't mean it wouldn't work for our audience. But I'm fairly sure it would work for our audience, because I know certainly quite a few of them are Critical Role fans, or Critters, as they refer to themselves. Yeah. And given how much Critical Role raised on Kickstarter for their animated show, I don't know if you saw this.
That was incredible. Yeah.
Stu has
brought it up once or twice.
Yeah, it's kind of like there's something like the third or fourth most funded thing on Kickstarter ever, and that includes all kind of electronic stuff that's been done on Kickstarter
and things like that. It was an amazing event that they ran there. Like the support they got from it and the speed that it like picked up as well was just astounding.
Yes. Yeah, and it just kept growing and just kept growing, and it was just kind of like, right, yeah, this. I mean, it was just an insane amount of money they raised, and that's fantastic. It demonstrates there is an audience for this, and it isn't just a North American audience either. It's, yeah, I mean, I mean, they almost have their own convention now. You know, it's they have bolt-on events to other conventions where, you know, you can go and see a live show and stuff like that. And even people like Satine Phoenix, I'm going to start saying something, like Satine Phoenix, she used to be the community manager at D&D, but she's a streamer as well. And she was, and I didn't even know this was happening, but she was over in London recently meeting up with other streamers and promoting D&D. And it was just like, oh, that's really cool. Yeah. And it's, but they, those sorts of personalities, would we want one of them to come? Absolutely we would. But it's the sort of thing that we don't know what we'll get them to do, you know? I mean, we've got, there's a podcast, sorry, a podcast, a YouTube channel called No Pun Included, Elaine and Efka, who do reviews of board games. They do them in a really interesting style and a really creative, comedic approach, but a proper breakdown of a game. And they'll slag something off if they don't like it as well, which is really honest. And,
yeah, it's what you want.
And they're coming up this year, which we think is, well, no, we don't think, we know it's really cool that they're coming. I mean, they've got almost 30,000 subscribers on YouTube, so it's kind of like, this is kind of cool. And we've kind of launched a competition for people to play a game with them on the Saturday. You know, and we've kind of, we've said of the individual's choice who wins. I mean, we'll curate that. but at the same time, the media aspect of the hobby is always has been weird to me, but that's the celebrity of the hobby, if you follow me.
Yeah.
You know, it's your Tom Vassals of this world from Dice Tower, your Rodney Smiths from, Rodney, what's your channel called? Watch It Played. And people like that, they're the celebrity. And whilst I would love to meet someone like Bruno Cathala, who designed Five Tribes and Abyss and stuff like that, the majority of board gamers won't know who Bruno is. You know, but they'll know who Rodney is, they'll know who Tom is, they'll know who Elaine and Efka are, you know, because of YouTube, primarily. Yeah. You know, anyway.
I think that covers that then.
Yeah, no.
Yes, is the short answer. You can edit all the rest of that out.
Too long, didn't read.
Yeah. Exactly. But caveat, 2020 is not on the table yet.
Yeah. We've already established that 2022 has been confirmed. So.
There's got to be ones in between as well.
That's a nice assumption you're making there. So I mean, we've kind of talked a lot about. I'm almost turning the tables on you here, guys. Sorry, but we've kind of talked a lot about. Right, so this is what the convention is offering, and we've obviously got a lot in that. What is it? Because you can give an opinion on this. What is it that stands out to you guys about this?
For me, personally, it's the first of its kind that I'm aware of. I'm aware of like, the big ones, but locally, it's the first of its kind that I'm aware of.
You don't really generally get anything like this in this kind of area. It's the closest thing you tend to find is, like, say, your Glasgow, Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
As much as we were joking about it earlier on, like you're saying, it's not too far to go. It's if that's the only reason you're going somewhere, it does kind of become that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have something that you're at least have just a passing interest in, at the very least, to have it on your doorstep. It's great to see that. It's great to see people choosing to bring it to somewhere like Perth as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And yeah, it's the way it's kind of marketed as well, the way it's pitched. Like, I don't feel, as I've mentioned last year and mentioned again this year, I'm completely newbie to all this, but I don't feel like I don't belong. I actually feel like I should go more than an experienced player, the way it's been marketed.
That's cool, because and that, it sounds like we've hit that kind of tone fairly well, because we do want people who are, for want of a better phrase, would be intimidated by a hardcore environment.
Yeah.
You know, if people want to come and play heavy Euro board games or games that take 8 hours, they're more than welcome to do that. And we have the space for it. In fact, we'll probably have some games like that in our library this year. But it's the sort of thing that it's not an exclusive event. It's an inclusive event.
Yeah.
You know, and we wanted that from the outset. And it's very much at the core of our identity. I've used that phrase a couple of times, but we have an identity. We're a family-friendly, inclusive tabletop convention. And we want to nurture that as much as we can, which is why, you know, we've got Habba as a family zone. But at the same time, if you're a hardcore D&D fan and you want to play D&D all weekend, you can do that. But if you want to just dabble in D&D, you can do that as well. You know, it's or if you're a Warhammer Underworlds fan, you know, which is one of Games Workshop's board games, that they've got, you know, we've got a Grand Clash again this year, which is an exclusive event to conventions. And Games Workshop, again, have given us permission to host one, which is fantastic. And we've got, I think, 32 people signed up for it so far. And it's that, I mean, and the majority of those guys and girls, for that matter, who are coming for that, majority of them will just come for that event and leave. And I know that, and I'm absolutely comfortable with that. But one of the people who's coming to that is one of the guys who's coming from America. I mean, in fact, one of the other guys who's coming to that is a guy coming from Germany. And it's just like, that's just nuts.
Yeah,
that
is.
But that's
it is mad, isn't it?
But cool at the same time.
But yeah, it's a good kind of mad. Bad mad. No. That some of us are a bit more familiar with.
Well.
You can't see where I'm looking, but you can guess.
I can tell the inflection in your voice where you're looking, yes.
Yeah, like you said, as long as they're coming in, even if it is just the one event, the one table, just the one thing that they enjoy, the key part is that they enjoyed it, and that's what they're looking for. That's what you're looking for as well. So
yes,
it's great for everyone.
And fundamentally, if people don't have a good time, right, and you know, there will be people who will not have the perfect experience, and that's going to happen. We did have a couple of I wouldn't call them pieces of negative feedback. We did have some feedback which was like, okay. Right. Okay. We'll take that on board, and we'll learn from that. You know, yeah. and we like to think we have for this year, and we'll find out in due course. but it's the sort of thing that we know that we are. I mean, it kind of goes back to the shameless approach of me just kind of contacting publishers and say, send us games, please. but we recognize that this is our second year. We recognize that we are. Whilst we're a big fish in a small pond from a Scotland perspective, we're a very small fish in a large ocean of games conventions across the world. So we are, I think, punching above our weight in a lot of respects. So it's should this continue, I'm quite happy to continue punching above our weight. If we can attract people, publishers or otherwise, who draw people in, great. But we're not UK Games Expo. We're not Esch and Spiel. We're not, you know, we're not Gen Con. We're never, he says, touching wood, perhaps. we're never going to be that scale because, well, certainly not with the size of team we've got. And unfortunately, it wouldn't fit in Perth. Because, you know, Gen Con just recently released, they had 70,000 people per day over a 4-day event.
Wow.
You know, and that's just mind blowing. I mean, when I was there, it was 62,000. So that's just nuts. But that's the size of this hobby. That's the growth of this hobby. You know, it's just insane, but in an exciting way.
It absolutely is. Yeah, and you're still seeing it grow now. More and more people getting more and more interested in it. It's an exciting time to be just. Even just on the outside of this kind of thing, and to see the continued growth, that just the interest in it's great to see. And I know we keep coming back to it. It is good to see like geekdom in general just having its day. You know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I think you go. Yep.
No, I was going to say something there, but it's almost political. Get it out. What I will say, though, is a certain leader of a party is known to be a gamer, and she, which will narrow it down, is a gamer, and that's not my political colours necessarily, but it is the sort of thing of the pervasiveness, is that the right word? The penetration of this hobby into kind of mainstream culture just continues to grow,
mm-hmm.
which is great.
Yeah, I mean, there's a we were talking about this the other day. There's a Hollywood sort of D&D culture now as well that's starting to emerge. with lots of people, turns out, are quite avid gamers in their spare time.
Yeah, it was always kind of underground. There was, it's still to an extent, it's underground, but it's not so much underground because everyone knows about it, which is the opposite of underground. But yeah, like you hear, like, see your Vin Diesels and that are avid gamers in their spare time, and even though people knew of it, it was never really talked about as much until recent years, and that's kind of how Critical Role came about. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's just
yeah.
people in the business enjoyed the hobby and made
yeah,
a bit of
I mean,
a thing of it. You know,
I mean, pretty much all the people who are in Critical Role are voice actors or actors,
yeah.
and you've got people like Joe Manganiello,
yeah.
who is, you know, an actor from True Blood and various other things who. He's been on a lot of the D&D live streams,
yeah.
And he was on Stephen Colbert talking about D&D because Stephen Colbert used to play D&D years ago, the American chat show host, and then Stephen Colbert for charity decides that I'll play a game of D&D one-on-one with Matt Mercer from Critical Role and raises X amount of money for charity, and it's like, okay, that didn't happen 10 years ago. Didn't happen
no,
5 years ago.
Yeah.
And whilst Joe might not be, a Tom Cruise or whatever it is from a status
he's
within
still
the industry.
He's a star. Like, if you were to
attach
his name to a project, you know, it garners interest.
Say,
exactly.
Like, Justice League or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
well,
relegate
okay,
him to,
okay,
like, a post-credit
player,
scene,
yeah.
you know? Let's not get into this.
It's not actually that bad a film, in all fairness.
Oh,
but
geez.
Let's not go into that. That's a whole other episode.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say, it surprised me. It wasn't as bad as I expected.
Yeah. If you take the really, really, really bad CG out of that film, because it is really bad,
yes.
then, you know, it's not the worst thing you'll ever watch. We were somehow the two avid supporters of the network of that movie. Everyone else seemed to just want to bash it into the ground. And it's popcorn enjoyment. You know, again, it's coming back to this thing where we're saying, like, you're seeing these things on the big screen. This is stuff that maybe a bit more than 10 years ago now, since the MCU started just over 11 years ago now. But,
yeah.
you know, the turn of the century, that's, someone said to you, you'd see the Justice League in cinema, you'd have just been laughed to the mouth.
And even if someone had said to you that the biggest box office movie of all time would be a film about Marvel superheroes.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you would just go, so what?
No.
But I think that geekdom kind of mainstream thing is part of that equation as well.
Absolutely.
I'm sure, you know, it's the sort of thing that people are more, what's the word, more, well, just being more open about their
yeah.
interest in this sort of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. That's no doubt helped the gaming industry as well as it has the comic book industry as well as it has other things.
Yeah, each one kind of knocks the other one on a little bit, which it's great for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, you see people, like, when you go to the midnight screens, the Avengers movies, you see people that you would never have expected to see. One of our friends actually brought his mother along to the midnight release of Avengers Endgame. It's just, you know, it's not something you would expect people like that to see, but they enjoy it. And
yeah.
why wouldn't they enjoy it, you know?
It's fun.
Yeah, that's it. That is absolutely at its core. It's fun. And
yeah.
if it's fun for me, why can't it be fun for somebody else? So
yeah.
why is it a surprise to see somebody in their 50s going to enjoy these films? Because it makes no sense for it to not make sense.
Exactly.
It's like my mum keeps asking me, what's happening with Guardians of the Galaxy 3?
Oh.
You know, because she loves the MCU and she loves that franchise specifically. And she's like, what's happening? Is it going to happen? And it's like, well, it will, but the Suicide Squad needs to be done
yeah,
first.
Yeah, exactly. He needs to do that first.
It's a mess of a situation, yeah.
Yeah. since him and Disney have kissed and made up, it's kind of like, right, okay, well, I've already committed to these things, guys. You're going to have to wait.
Yeah.
And they will wait, because...
Brass balls on them to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, don't get me wrong, absolutely, but you could tell... I mean, we are obviously going to a very different topic, but that's fine because I can talk about this for hours
yeah.
as well. But it's the sort of thing that, you know, he obviously had the cast support, right?
Oh, unanimously, yeah.
And I think that spoke volumes that they wanted to work with him. And mm-hmm. and that's great because he's done a great job with the first two. So
absolutely.
Hopefully the third one will be great as well.
Yeah.
And I think I was listening to a podcast, not yourselves, a couple of weeks ago. I know there are other podcasts out there, which was talking about the kind of often rumored D&D movie. That, you know, obviously we don't talk about any previous incarnations of that. No, but there is, you know, one that's being made or in pre-production or whatever it is. And Joe Manganiello is part of the writing team for that. And it's kind of like, right, okay, so this Hollywood reference, this connection to the kind of film industry, film and TV industry, is actually starting to go, well, maybe you should be looking at those properties. I mean, yeah. I mean, Magic the Gathering's been picked up as a TV show from the guy who did, one of the guys who worked on X-Files and something else. And it's kind of like, right, okay. I mean, it's not been optioned yet, but it's there as a potential thing for a Netflix or a whoever.
I was just about to say, you know, Netflix will be very, very near to that.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's the thing. It's another kind of escapist medium, or sorry, another escapist environment for a medium to promote through, whether that be, you know, your Walking Deads or your Game of Thrones or your whatever it is. I mean, Game of Thrones is just D&D. If you boil it down to, it's a fantasy environment.
That does really make sense if you follow that through, because, you know, you start off with the greatest of intentions, you have the meatiest story ever, and it kind of just falls away into nothing in the end.
Yeah. That's a very, nothing very sad view.
Disappointment and sadness.
Well, you know, I haven't watched any of the Game of Thrones, which has actually appalled many fans of mine.
Despite being a huge fan of the series, I would say just don't.
Right, okay. Okay.
No one needs that heartache in their life.
Noted. I don't have the hours to catch up anyway, but hey. But yeah, I mean, there's... And even the vice versa is true, where lots of things like Disney Villainous, which is one of the biggest hits of board games last year, you know, where you play the villains from Disney movies, as an example, is the kind of media tie-in aspect of the hobby is starting to grow as well, which, you know, might not always be a good thing. You know, we'll wait and see. You have to tread some of these things carefully.
Yeah.
But Disney Villainous is a very good game. And we happen to have two copies of the new expansion that isn't out until September in our games library, which is cool. In fact, we have one of them. We have one of the ones which is kind of out now, I think, but we'll also have two of that as well. Again, provided by the people who make Jaws, Ravensburger. Yeah. So it's just like suddenly this big box of games arrived in my house, and I'm like, ah, thank you very much.
I'm going to be playing that.
Oh, dear.
Big shout out to our own podcast guy, so Stuart Kane from Big Dog Books.
Yep.
I believe he'll be exhibiting again this year.
Stuart is indeed, and he's beside the Harbour Zone because he's
right where he belongs.
He's working closely with Harbour on that front, which is cool.
Yeah, so Stuart joined the network back in May, I believe, with their new Big Dog Books podcast. Pod, yep. PAW, I love it.
Very in theme there, yes.
Yeah, I suppose, like I mentioned earlier, it's been quite a good 6 months, even though this podcast specifically has been quite quiet. We've got a new website, we were joined by Beyond the Arc podcast as well, with Saman and his brothers, and like we just said, Stuart and his team have now joined with the podcast as well, so big shout out to all of them. And they're all doing really well, and you should all check them out. So I guess, sort of just in closing, where can people actually find you online, short of just searching for Tabletop Scotland? What's the web address, and where can they get you?
So the web address is tabletopscotland.co.uk, and then on the various social medias, it's either Tabletop Scotland or Tabletop Scot, in the case of Twitter and Instagram. Me, I am usually found... with my head in my hands, no. on Twitter, I'm classed as A Second Chapter, so the word letter A, second 2nd chapter, and there's a story behind that, but that's a whole other conversation. and that's kind of the main kind of thing. I tend to use Twitter. I mean, I use Facebook, but I use it for the con primarily. Mm-hmm. But I use Twitter a fair amount, so how I tend to interact with a lot of RPG people that I know. If you want to follow me on Twitter, by all means, you're just going to get largely retweets of what we tweet from Tabletop Scotland and random D&D musings.
Sounds like a win. to be honest.
Well, you know, it's not a loss, I suppose, technically. So does that make it a win? Maybe.
By default, it has to be a win. Is it not a loss? It could be a draw, though.
Moving on.
What about you, Kev? You want to sign off? Where can people find you online?
They can't.
There we go then.
You'll find me on Facebook and Twitter at Kezigin, which is KEZIGIN. And or through the Fair City Podcast Network itself.
Mm-hmm. At FC Podnet, yeah. So, Dave, I just want to say a massive thanks for giving up your time this evening for us. You've been a brilliant guest, and I'm not even going to hope the event is going to do great, because I know the event's going to do great. I've seen it last year, and it sounds like it's bigger and better already. So I hope you enjoy. Actually, take time to enjoy the event this year.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Fair City Podcast Network. Fair City Podcast is a part of Britpod Scene, an independent network of uniquely British podcasts that's always growing. Check out BritpodScene.com or follow BritpodScene on the Twitter to find out more.
So, if you want to find us, you can find us at FC Podnet on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook as well if you just search for us. Or you can find our website at fcpod.net. Kev, thanks for co-hosting tonight.
Anytime.
Dave, thanks again for being a brilliant guest.
Always a pleasure.
Until next time, thanks for listening.